All presentations are provided for informational purposes only. They do not serve as an invitation or encouragement to participate in any investment activities. If you are considering making an investment, you should seek appropriate financial advice. What you're about to listen to is an audio recording of a presentation originally broadcast on our platform. As such, sometimes presenters might refer to graphs, images, or videos. For the original presentation and much more, check out our website at investormeetcompany.com. Apologies for the interruption. Back to the presentation.
Good morning and welcome to the Petromitad Limited operational update. Throughout this recorded presentation, investors will be in listen-only mode. Questions are encouraged and they can be submitted at any time using the Q&A tab situated on the right-hand corner of your screen. Simply type in your questions and press send. The company may not be in a position to answer every question it receives during the meeting itself. However, the company can review all questions submitted today and publish responses where it is appropriate to do so. Before we begin, I would like to submit the following poll. And I would now like to hand you over to CEO Mike Buck. Good morning to you.
Good morning and good day to everybody that's dialing in for this presentation. Thank you very much for your attendance. We really appreciate your interest. We've got four members of the team with us today, myself and Jerry Smart, to deal with the oil side of the business. And we've got Zula and Enkbatter from Sunstep to deal with our renewable energy piece. Hopefully you can all see, if you're set up that way, you can see our presentation on the screen. So what we'd like to do is give you a bit of an operational update for 2025 and a look ahead for 2026. I'll kick off and then I'll hand over to the various members of the team for their bit. So a little bit of an update on the Mongolian oil industry. We'll deal with oil first of all. As you may be aware, the new government in Mongolia, which came in the middle part of 2024, has been prioritizing energy independence. It's not unique amongst countries around the world in that respect. But of course, Mongolia being landlocked between just two neighbors, Russia and China, has always had a dependency that it would really like to get away from. And that energy independence has been focusing most recently under the new government on the reinvigoration of the oil sector and on the renewable energy potential of the country. So we feel quite well placed, given that we've been active in the oil sector in Mongolia for as long as we have, and also the move we took back in 2020, 2021 to get involved in renewables. And that's moving very well, and we'll talk you through that as we go. So our usual production chart on the right, top right-hand side of this slide shows you Mongolia's daily crude production, and the red line at the top is what they need to fill the refinery that they're building. So as you can see, even at peak production back in 2015, they're falling short of that. And the government recognizes this and is very, very motivated to try and move things along. Hence, Petromitad, having been stuck for a number of years, was able under the new government to get a lot of things sorted out very quickly and come on stream. And we'll talk you through what we're up to and on our producing assets now. But as you can see, there's a big gap to fill here. And the government is very, very well aware of this and wants to prioritize bringing in new companies, making sure whoever's discovered oil gets it on stream. So we've got no obstacle when it comes to selling our crude. And once that refinery is finished, and I'll say a little bit about that in a moment, then we've got the potential for savings on trucking costs, etc. PetroChina operates 90% of this production. They're our neighbor and they're cooperating with us in our production operations. And Mongolia's refined product consumption as a country is now in excess of 56,000 barrels a day of refined product. And at the moment, it's having to import all of those, which is why it's gone down the route of having a domestic refinery. But as I say, it does need the crude to fill it. So it's working hard on that. The refinery status, the latest published schedule was to have the refinery operational by 2028. Although there have been some reports recently that might come forward. If it does, it will be the first time that it's come forward. Usually it slips year on year, but they're saying 2027. I even saw somewhere that said 2026, but I doubt that very much. So that refinery requires 30,000 barrels a day of feedstock. And as I say, there's a gap that needs to be filled. And we are certainly hopeful that our Block 20 production can help fill that void. The pipeline, the picture at the bottom, it was taken during the summer of this year. The pipeline that is going to take the oil from the Block 19 and 21 fields that PetroChina operates just to the north of us to the refinery site, which is 550 kilometers away. That pipeline is now buried. I drove down the pipeline road the other day. It's basically all buried, and now they are working on the pumping stations. So the work on the pipeline has gone very, very quickly, and that should be finished, well, probably before the refinery is ready. But we are very much hoping that once that pipeline is in operation, that will offer us a much more cost-effective route to market than the current trucking operation, which takes our oil to the PetroChina facilities where it's processed and then 300 kilometers across the border into China for refining. Fair to say that PetroChina does do a very good job of trucking, and it is quite cost-effective, but we are very much hopeful that the pipeline route to the refinery will be a lot more environmentally friendly and a lot cheaper. I will now hand over to Jerry to talk you through the status of our operations at Heron and Gazelle in Block 20. Jerry.
Thank you, Mike, and good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. I'm Jerry Smart. I'm the technical and subsurface manager. So just a few slides on where we are, status of our activities in Block 20, and then a slide on our ambition for next year. In 2026. So we'll start with the Heron field. So the two pictures on the slide are the Heron production site with the nodding donkey and the two tanks and the office and the generator housing. And the one below is a more recent picture showing the installation of the electric pylons and the transformer there. And now I'm pleased to say that actually the Heron well site is fully electric powered, so that project has now completed, and I'll talk a little bit about that at the minute. In terms of production, we've exceeded about 70,000 barrels of production since we started in October last year. Pleasingly, the water cut is very low, still at less than 3%, and we've actually not seen any free water at all, in fact, to date. Currently, the well is delivering somewhere between 135 to 145 barrels a day. Very stable production, in line with some of the better wells that we know about in Block 19. So the well is actually performing pretty well, and it's actually producing to actually our forecast. So that's very pleasing. We think we're accessing quite a large actually volume of rock. The frack that we did, the stimulation that we did, we think is accessing a little oil sand beneath the main upper sand that we didn't test originally, but we know from petrophysics is oil bearing. So I think the rock volume we're accessing is larger than just the sand we perforated. So that may be why the well has been quite stable, because it's accessing quite a large amount of rock. As you know, the oil gets transported about 25 kilometers to north through the Block 19 facilities, and we've made over now 330 loads delivered to that facility. And that's a frequent point. We do it at least every day, both now with the Gazelle as well. So that's an ongoing activity. The power line, as I said, 10 kV power line is now installed. And that's now, so the generator is off. So we're not burning any more diesel at Heron, which is good for both cost saving, but also for emissions as well. So that's a great project that the team managed to do. Not something an oil company is usually qualified already knows how to do it, but we got it done in very good time, in fact, so we're very pleased with that. And I'm sure you're aware that all operations in the field are actually done by my Mongolian colleagues, a team of eight on rotation, and most of whom actually come from the local the local villages, if you will, and so that's great. So it's a really sort of local enterprise that the team is running there. Heron 2, as you know, we got that well back into testing this year, and we've been trying to encourage it to flow at commercial rates, but it's not quite there yet. We have been mainly recovering actually some of the fluid that we originally put into the formation, when we stimulated the well, and then when we did that acid job earlier this year. So we're still recovering the fluid from that, but also with a bit of oil as well. So there's clearly oil in the reservoir, but I wonder if we suspect we've got some kind of fluid bank around the wellbore that we have to diminish first before we can get 100% oil to come out, and then we might see an improvement in the flow, but we'll see. Currently, the well is shut in for the winter. We couldn't keep going in very cold temperatures with the off-taking facility that we had there. We'll measure the fluid level in the well during the winter to see how it's performing, and then we'll go back to it in the spring and have another go at it and see if we can encourage it to get to commercial rates. Or we might even do some other technologies in the well to encourage it, but we'll think about that over the winter months. Moving on to Gazelle. So this is a very pleasing success, actually. The top picture there is the Gazelle production site, just the one tank there, and you can see the truck offloading there at that time. And below the image is actually, you'd be pleased to know that we have CCT coverage both at Heron and Gazelle, in fact, to monitoring what's going on there. Gazelle doesn't have a manned office, whereas Heron does, just six clicks away. So that's why we've got CCTV installed, so we can see, make sure everything's hunky-dory there during the day night and night time. So we went back to Gazelle and perforated and tested it. We started the well test sort of in early-ish October, and the well did very well initially, 8 meter zone across those two relatively thin sands, delivering about 400 barrels a day, maximum rate really on test. That's about all the kit could do, sort of thing. Crude is the same as Heron, quite nice, very high gravity API. It is waxy, just like Heron, so it's a very similar crude. No surprise there, it's the same source rock. And very quickly, by the end of October, the well was in production. So, you know, less than 30 to 45 days. Took from the start of the mobilization of the test to actually getting the thing in production, which is a commendable job by the field team to get that done. You can see the beam pump there. Everything's working pretty well. We do have a little bit of water coming out now from this well, which we are optimizing the production to try and mitigate that. The well is quite down dip on the structure of Gazelle, so we're going to try and optimize production so we don't pull up water from the edge of the oil water contact, if you will. So we're still playing with that, so the rate is still being optimized. Just like Heron, the tanker goes to the facility in block 19 and goes into the same basically input valve as Heron does, and goes through the same process and gets exported the same way. It's a new discovery, new production, so we do need to do a field reserves report for the authorities, which is ongoing right now, and by which through that mechanism that gets approved, then we'll get some proven reserves booked for Gazelle probably in the new year, in the first quarter, with a bit of luck, but we'll see how that goes with the authority. And of course, it's the same team who will also manage Gazelle. So there's sort of an OPEX saving by now having two wells managed by the same team. Moving on to then a sort of summary of what we did this year. There's some commentary that I've read in some of the chat rooms about why does it take so long to do stuff? Why do we start so late in the year? It's probably just worth mentioning to folk, of course, like any business, you do your budget and your planning before the start of the next year, and we do that and we submit it to the authority at the end of the year for the next year. But the authority takes its time, several months sometimes, to approve our budget. Once that budget is approved, then we have to get the environmental management plan approved, without which we can't legally do any work on site, and that can take a month or two. So by the time we do anything, when we've got the paperwork in place to allow us to do anything, we're sort of certainly into March and April as it is. Now, you know that the springtime is when we can start operations safely because it's too cold before. But nevertheless, it takes a while for the paperwork to get in place. But once we get the paperwork in place, and then, of course, we've then got to talk to the contractors and get them lined out. And, of course, they're not hanging around waiting for us to give them the nod. They are busy doing other stuff, so we then have to fit in with their program as well, so that can obviously cause delay as well. So, you know, we don't have control of the timeline. We are at the destiny of other folks' timelines too. So, but we do our best to accelerate everything we possibly can. The top picture here is a picture of the activities that we raised the money for, and the square greens and the square greys are what we, the timing that we said that we would try and do those activities by. And the green dots and the arrows are actually what we actually achieved. So if we start with the electrification, so we got the funds in the end of July, and of course you can't sign contracts if you don't have funds for the activity. So all the contract work was put in place pretty quickly after we knew we had the funding. The electrification project was the first on our list to try and mitigate, or rather decrease, the OPEX. So we got that running quickly. A little bit more bureaucracy than anticipated. Again, it's something we've never done before, so we learned a little bit of how that process works. But nevertheless, 12th December, Heron was working off electricity and saving us something like 70% of our energy needs for that well site. So that's a good achievement by the team. We went to Heron too and did the acid wash and the testing, and completed the well, as you know. So that was achieved as well. We went to Gazelle, did the well test. It was successful. We completed it in its production. So that's completed as well. Gobi Bear, we sort of ran out a little bit of time to do that because we had the focus on making sure we got Gazelle on stream. So that we'll defer that until next year. And of course, our other block seven, we are continuing our studies on block seven. But it's interesting, there's a slide on this coming later on, but we only recently got the data that's existing on the block anyway. So it's difficult to get going doing studies if you don't have the data in hand. So reading the words now, electrification project done, Heron 2 still working on it, but actually we got set ourselves so we can encourage the well to flow. Gazelle is in production, and Gobi Bear is the only thing we deferred to next year from the work program that we raised the funds for. For the oil sales, there's another slide coming, I think, that Hongers or Tiffany is going to talk about. But as you know, the oil goes to Block 19. We hope that about at the end of the year, we should have generated, or in the expectation that we're generating, in line of our advisors, is around about over $2.5 million net to us. That's after the split with the government. The tax issue that we've talked about before is nearly or largely resolved, and I think there might be some commentary on that later. And clearly, everything we're doing, we learn from it, and we try and get ourselves to be more efficient as we keep learning how to do things, and the team learn how things work. So we are always looking at doing efficiencies and trying to optimize things. Looking for next year then, so this is our aspiration. So above is some pictures of radial drilling, which is one of these techniques that can improve well performance. And we learned recently that PetroChina to the north of us has been deploying this technology in some of their wells. So we are talking to them about their experience of using that technology and what success they've had. And with a bit of luck, and if it's cost effective and the contractor is available, that's the kind of technology you might try and deploy next year in either existing or perhaps new wells to get a well performance up. The bottom bar graph is what our ambition is. So our ambition is basically, obviously, to continue production as is. We will look at dewaxing Heron 1. Basically, as I said before, the crude is quite waxy, and you can get deposits of wax downhole that can begin to block up the tubing, etc. So we'll do a hot wax wash to try and dissolve that to make sure it doesn't become a problem. We'll go back to Heron 2 and try and encourage it to flow better. We'll look at potential drilling locations around Heron and Gazelle for infill drilling. We'll look at 3D seismic acquisition. As you know, half the block is covered by 2D, which is a little bit challenged in places. So it would be great to have modern 3D. The bit of 3D we have is getting on for 20 years old now. It's good, but clearly new acquisition would provide us with better fidelity data, to which you can do some of the more clever things now with seismic interpretation and geological interpretation of those data. So we look to do that. We look at maybe electrifying Gazelle as well to save on diesel costs. And we'll go back to Gobi Bear, and we'll continue our studies on Block 7 now, because all of that is obviously on contingent on funding and things like the farm out discussions that are ongoing too. But that's the kind of program that we're going to put into our budget for the authority to get our environmental plan based on, so that we can actually do any or all of these things within the requirements of the law. So I think I've talked through this words on the slide to the left already. So I think I'll probably move on to the next one. And the next one is just the summary slide on Block 7. The top map there shows you in red outline where the block is in southern Mongolia. And the important thing for us and why we like the block is that you can see on the Chinese side of the borders, lots of green color in the basins there. They're oil-bearing basins. And more importantly for us, they have oil in plays that so far do not or have not been discovered in Mongolia to date. So I'm talking about oil in older rocks in the Lower Cretaceous, so in Permian or indeed Carboniferous rocks that are proven to be oil-bearing in China. The lower map is a gravity map. So simplistically, the reds are the highs and the greens and the blues are the basinal areas. So, and there's a big red dot in the middle there called JC1 well, and that is a well very close to the block boundary. And on the cross section, the bottom of the text, you can see where the JC well where it is, and a circle joint drawn around the bottom of that well. And that's a graphic showing that in that well, there is oil shows and Permian sediments in that well. And that's the kind of play that we're hoping will extend into Block 7, and as you can see, the proximity is very close to our block. So now we've got approval to actually, with the exploration license awarded to us eventually in October, that allows us to physically go in and do activity in the block. We'll look to see whether we can do some field work and maybe scout up possible seismic acquisition, certainly in those southern basins next door to the proven basins in China. So that's the excitement of the block. But clearly, it's not cheap to explore in that's quite remote parts of Mongolia. So clearly, we are seeking the partners and trying to farm this block out as well. And I think that's it for me.
All right, Jerry, thank you very much. So here's a slide on the oil sales agreement. Actually, Hungerzal and I drew straws to see who would present this, and I lost. So I'm presenting it. Because as you probably know, if you're readers of our RNSs, this has been a long-running argument with PetroChina about the agreement they signed back in April and the fact that since then they've been withholding revenue that is not allowed under the contract. And that's been very, very frustrating. The issue there was PetroChina was scared of tax implications. They still signed the agreement, even though we talked to them endlessly about the tax implications and then just started withholding. We've made some really good progress in the last few weeks, finally getting some traction and some momentum on the PetroChina side to move this forward. They have now accepted, based on what we've had from the tax authorities, all the stuff we've told them, that yes, there is no need for them to withhold, fearing that they'll get hit for tax. If the tax they're worried about is actually an obligation, which it isn't, it would be an obligation on us, not them, and we would pay it, but we won't have to because it's not required by law. Where we are now is we're down to the final conversation of the tax on the charges that they levy for handling our oil for us. And that's a standard industry thing. When somebody is processing and transporting your oil, it increases the amount of hassle they have, the amount of management they have to do. So we're being charged at cost for the processing and the trucking, and there's a small management fee on top of that. But obviously that is considered to be income. The way that they have contracted this, it makes it a little bit complicated. And so we are now trying to finalize with them exactly how to handle that. We may try and convince them to make changes to the way they contract their side of things for 2026 to actually make at least part of this problem go away and a saving for everybody. Whether they're free to do that, we're not sure. Obviously, PetroChina is a big organization, a state-owned enterprise. So they do have their rules and regulations that maybe a nimble producer like ourselves doesn't have the problem, but seemingly they do. Anyway, I'm really hoping that we will sort this out soon. PetroChina did seem enthusiastic to try and pay us the withheld amount before the end of the year, which we were very happy about, but we pointed out to them that their record so far on paying an invoice is about 6 weeks. When the contract they signed, where they put in it that they would pay within 3 weeks, they've been effectively 100% late as their best performance to date. So we're hoping to get this one resolved pretty soon to be able to announce that it's resolved and then to receive the money, but it probably won't be until January or February. But it will be good to know that finally it is coming. So making progress on this, we try not to get too frustrated or in public, because at the moment the cooperation we're getting from PetroChina operationally is very good. They seem very happy to be receiving our oil. Most of the tankers that arrive at their facilities are tankers largely full of water with a little bit of oil, because their wells have now been on stream for many, many years, and the water cut is going up dramatically. They like getting the dry oil from Block 20. It's quite a good advertisement for Block 20 as well. So they are keen to keep receiving, and they are offering us all manner of operational cooperation. The financial cooperation has been a bit harder to get, but we think we're getting there. So that one is still a work in progress, but I'm pretty hopeful of a solution pretty soon. So what I'll do now is I'll hand over to Zula and Enkbata to talk you through an update on Sunstep Renewable Energy, which is our joint venture that is looking at the massive renewable potential in Mongolia. So Zula, over to you.
Good evening, everyone. I'm pleased to update you on the status of Sunstep Renewable Energy activities for the past 1 year. Since forming the joint venture with Petromatat, ISRI has worked hard to ensure alignment with Mongolia's energy policy 2050 and energy vision 20 countries vision 2050, which is a policy roadmap till 2050, and various state policies and energy sector. So these are phased out in mainly three pathways, which is first is energy security independence, and then regional integration and climate neutrality. So this is first I would like to explain. From 2025 to 2030, Mongolia's priority is to fully support domestic energy independence and energy demand. So these are coming through expanded generation capacity, grid reliability, and rapid growth in renewable energy, particularly in solar and wind. This phase focuses on the overall energy independence for Mongolia, right? So, and then the next phase, which is in Mongolia's energy strategy, is from 2030 till 2040, the policy shifts towards the energy export, positioning Mongolia as a regional energy exporter. So Mongolia has announced this, our Prime Minister recently, leveraging the large renewable energy resources and cross-border discussions, interconnections to be continued G2G level, right? So while continuing market tariff reforms as well to attract private investment into the sector. From 2040 till 2050, this is same as in global markets. Mongolia has also pledged, aimed to achieve net zero in the energy sector, so transitioning largely widely from the coal dependency into the clean and low carbon energy mix, supported by the technologies, energy storage, and just energy frameworks, which is happening globally. Just a bit about the domestic market again. Mongolia's domestic market is considered small by local standards due to the low population. However, the energy capacity is, the demand is growing fast due to the mining expansion. Currently, by as of 2025, the energy demand is 1.8 gigawatts. So this is expected to grow by double to 3.5 gigawatts by in the next 5 years. So as such, majority of this demand will need to be supplied by renewable energy. It's well positioned participate and join the supply of renewable energy demand domestically. As I already mentioned, the sector has huge potential for the energy export. So these are potentially targeting Mongolia's largest energy demand neighbor, the massive Chinese energy needs. So while it will take a bit of time to mature, this will need to, in parallel, the G2G discussions between the governments, Mongolia and China, needs to be matured. We have seen that major Chinese and international investors already preparing, counting on the G2G discussions. So ISRI is also well positioned to participate in this larger energy export initiatives. Next slide, please. Since ISRI is formed in first quarter of 2023, we have been working on four major projects. I have already explained the government policy. So ISRI is well positioned to, it's actually an optimal time for ISRI to participate and join the this government support in renewable energy. In the locally, we operate with six on-ground staffs, all experienced in the energy sector over 20 years and continuously engaging with regulators, off-takers, and financiers. Staff are all Mongolian and all in experienced in domestic and international experiences. So the JV has currently four advanced projects in our portfolio. And I will now summarize very shortly this. Our Chief Technical Officer, Ing Patter, will go through the most recent progress of this project. So we have 24 megawatt renewable powered green hydrogen project with Oyu-Tolga, Mongolia's largest copper mine. We have exclusivity with the Oyu-Tolga government, MOEs, and all with a very strong support from the government. Feasibility studies are done at the international standards and grant funding already in place. This will be Mongolia's first green hydrogen pilot project and to be expanded in the next phases. We also have the battery storage 50 megawatt at CHER. Feasibility studies also has been approved. This is now being upscaled to align with government proposal for 100 megawatt battery storage at this location. So we are now to participate for the upscaled larger bid. We have partnered with battery storage company, ZTT, a contractor who actually built Mongolia's first utility scale battery storage, which is in operation. So this is a very experienced partner we already have. So we expect the notification of the bid submission for this larger project in the new year. And the government is very keen to have this battery storage online to stabilize the grid as soon as possible. We also have a large-scale power export project initiative. Each 1.5 gigawatt in two locations to benefit from the energy export to China. So under this initiative, we have signed exclusive MOU with one of the largest state-owned Chinese utility, China State Power Investment Corporation, which is the third largest state utility in China. SPIC is the investor and the Chinese in this project, and SRE is the local developer partner. So currently, this energy export initiative is ongoing. We are doing studies and waiting for the progress of G2G discussions, which are ongoing, right? And last but not least, our 200 megawatt hybrid project with Tsitsi Mines and Energy, supported by an existing PPA, is our most recent and prioritized project, targeting ready to build in 2026. Mr. Inkwater, he will now walk you through the details of this project. So we see this potentially a rapid progress in 2026. Thank you. Inkwater?
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. My name is Inkwater. I'm a SRE team. So I have experience to work in energy sector for 28 years. So I'm happy that I was joined for the construction of the first large-scale, utility-scale battery storage system, large-scale of solar PV plant in Mongolia, and also contributed in the largest wind power in Mongolia. So it's my pleasure to present that we, as Dola has mentioned before, that we are working with them. Tsitsi Mines and Energy. We are developing the hybrid energy system in Mongolia. It's very unique because it will be the first big scale of the hybrid energy system, which combining of the solar, wind, and battery storage system. And the most unique is it will be operating in the well infrastructured area and adjacent to the existing power plant, which is now operating in the grid. So the power plant capacity is will be total capacity of the power plant is 600 megawatt. For our hybrid system, we phase it in two phases. First phase will be containing 100 megawatt of the solar with 40 megawatt of the battery storage system, which will be commenced in quarter three of 2027. For the phase two, we are planning to add 100 megawatt of wind with 40 megawatt of the battery storage system to be commenced in the quarter four of 2028. Yeah, as you can see on this page, you can see the power plant. So this is the Port Richard power plant, which is operating. Just in the north side is the coal mine, which is based on this, which the power plant is operating from using the coal of this mine. And We are planning to deploy this first phase in the west of the power plant, which in the land is secured. It will be projected in the existing land of utilized by Tsinzmaizen and Energy, and also the wind power system will be located in adjacent to the solar PV plant. Just one, please let me switch to the next. So, as Mongolia, just for information, that Mongolia is very rich with solar and wind energy, especially as per the study of the NREL, they have estimated that the reserve of PV capacity is 2.2 terawatt. For the wind, we have 1.1 terawatt of the wind resources to be utilized. So we are, in terms of the position of the our project, it's very good in terms of the solar resources and wind resources. Very recently, we have deployed the wind mast. So we have installed 120 meter of the wind mast for investigation of the wind resources. So in terms of the solar PV plant, in terms of the solar PV plant, the first first part of the project will be, it's secured with the study land and necessary grid study also being done. And especially for the technical and commercial study is completed and grid study also completed. And right now we are working on the gathering of the wind resource data. So based on this wind resource data, the full the next second phase study will be done. So as informed before, and this would be the first big scale of utility scale of the solar wind battery storage project in Mongolia. Okay, so that is the brief presentation of the 200 megawatt hybrid project. Thank you.
Okay, Engbada Zula, thank you very much for that. I hope everybody can hear me. I've been having a little bit of trouble with my computer, but we'll settle down now. So that that concludes the run through of our slides, and I'll hand back to IMC for a little bit of housekeeping before we get on with the Q&A.
That's great, Mike. Thank you very much indeed all for your presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, please do continue to submit your questions using the Q&A tab situated on the top right corner of your screen. While the company take a few moments to review those questions submitted today, I would like to remind you that a recording of this presentation, along with a copy of the slides and the published Q&A, can be accessed via our investor dashboard. Mike, at this point, if I may now hand back to you to take us through the Q&A session, read out the questions where appropriate, and I'll pick up from you at the end. Thank you.
All right, thanks very much indeed. So we did ask people to have the chance to submit live, and we got a lot of questions, so thank you for that. Thank you very much for your interest. We've kind of prepared a top level list of questions that seem to be asked by a number of people, so hopefully the general answers to those we'll cover a lot, but there are still quite a few more questions to get through. Any that we don't get through, or that it becomes too time consuming to do right now, we will answer them online on the IMC platform after the event. We'll try and do that reasonably quickly rather than leaving it a few weeks, as I think we did last time. So anyway, let me get on with the top level questions. First of all, in the category of financial, the question is, Following the finalization of the oil sales agreement, can you confirm the timeline for receiving the withheld PetroChina revenues? Confirm, probably not, given the way it's gone up until now. I thought this would have been solved a long time ago and the money would already be in hand. As I mentioned in the presentation, they're not the fastest payers. We do have the ability to charge them interest for being late, and we do continually threaten them with that. We haven't done it as yet. As I said, we're hopeful that we're going to get the money, but I don't think it's going to be before the end of this year. So we're chasing for it in January. It might be February, but we're chasing for it and we expect to get it. The withheld amount is currently around about 850,000 US. So we'd very much like to get that through the door. Next question. Based on the new Heron 1 and Gazelle 1 production levels, will Petromitad be fully self-funding for operational expenditure in 2026 without the need for further equity raises? Well, we're in the happy position finally to be a producing company with a decent amount of revenue coming through the door that pays for the company to exist and generates a little bit of free cash flow on top of that. Not as much as we'd like, not as much as we want to be able to be very, very active in 2026, which is why we're focusing on a farm out program. As Jerry showed you, we've got aspirations to do quite a lot of work in 2026. We would prefer to do that with somebody else's money and not by going back to shareholders to get it. So we don't have any plans for an equity raise, and we are in the position where with revenue generating, with revenue being generated, you know, we can cover the costs of the company, and we're happy with that position at the moment, but we don't want to be a company that just exists. We want to be doing work. So we're pushing that farm out very hard. We've had a lot of questions about the farm out. There wasn't much in the presentation itself, but I will go through some questions in a moment and hopefully answer as many of those as I can. Given the reported slowdown in the Heron 1 production and complexity seen in Heron 2 retest, what is the updated production guidance for 2026? We haven't issued any production guidance yet. Heron 1, as Jerry said, is pretty much in line with our forecast now and pretty much in line with what we've seen in some of the better wells in Block 19 to the north. So I think we should be able to produce a decent forecast for Heron 1 for 2026 that we can stand behind. Gazelle 1 is still early days. You know, the well has only been on stream for a little over a month. And we have had a few teething problems to get over. Those are hopefully now behind us. We do still have a little bit of a debate going on in the field with the unloading procedure at PetroChina that we're hoping to resolve pretty soon. So we haven't put out guidance yet because primarily we want to get a better handle on what we think Gazelle will do long term. And we also want to make sure that we manage water so we don't get a heavy water breakthrough and that we maximize oil production. So please be a little bit patient on production guidance. Next section of questions, production and progress. What is the technical plan, e.g. injector wells or workovers, to sustain or increase current production levels in Block 20? Our plan of development for Block 20 was pretty much in line with what was done in Block 19 over the years. You do need to support the reservoir pressure as you take the oil out, because there's not a well plumbed in aquifer that will keep the reservoir pressure up. So pressure starts to decline. PetroChina has used a water flood, not a full water flood, a partial water flood to support that. We prepared our plan of development saying the same thing, so it wouldn't seem too radical. We would like to use something other than water. We might like to use CO2 if we can find a nice source of CO2 nearby, because that kills two birds with one stone. It sequesters CO2 and also keeps reservoir pressure up. So there will be the need for injector wells. We are planning some well interventions, as Jerry said, to make sure we're not blocking up the tubing with wax, etc. But yeah, in the longer term, we would get round to doing pressure support, but we want to focus on production first of all. So, next drilling would be potential producers. Can you provide an update on current daily production rate, cumulative production, and the observed water cut from Heron 1? I think we've more or less covered this. Heron has done 70,000 barrels or thereabouts to date. It's producing between 135 and 145 barrels a day. And the water cut at 3%, when we say there's no free water, when a tanker arrives at PetroChina and they open the valve at the bottom to let the water out, there is no water, it's just oil. The 3% water cut is what you get from the lab analysis. So it's actually not water sitting, not oil sitting on top of water. And we're very happy that that's still the situation after 14 months of production. When is the company scheduled to publish the next competent persons report? We haven't updated our CPR since the one we did to get us the exploitation license. We thought about doing one as a result of getting Gazelle on stream. We don't want to spend money unnecessarily, though. We don't think that that well came in particularly in any way different from the forecast. We're looking at that at the moment. When we did do the exploitation license application, a competent person's report was required. We're not sure that an update will be done, but at some stage, I think we will look at doing that. Oh, sorry, I just ended up pressing all the way to the bottom of my document, which wasn't the most sensible thing to do. Next one, farm out and development. Can you provide a clear time frame for concluding the Block 20 farm out agreement? Now, as we have reported, we received a proposal from one of our counterparties. They then wanted to do a field visit, which we did. It's an unusual time of year to do it, the first week of December, but we did it. That went well. We are now finalizing, I hope, the technical commercial Q&A with them. We've given them feedback on the proposal they made, and the ball is in their court. We hope that they come back quickly. Up until now, it's been a little bit slower moving than we wanted, but we're hoping that we have endeavored to answer all the questions they've had. Obviously, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and the timing is really up to them. But we have pointed out that at the moment they're first in a queue of currently three, and they shouldn't want to lose that first place position, so they need to get on with it. So we are encouraging to move forward. I can't really give too much in the way of a clear timeline for concluding. We're pushing for as soon as possible because we'd like to make sure that the 2026 operational window has lots of activity in it, and it's financed by the farming partner. If the current party you're negotiating with declines, what alternative plans and what is the associated budget for 2026 drilling season to ensure development continues? Yeah, so we have three parties involved. I think another question has been asked somewhere, are they the same three as previously? One of the three previous dropped out, but has been replaced by somebody else. So we're still talking to three people. The one that have made the proposal are the furthest forward. If we were not to conclude a deal with them, we would be hopeful that one of the other two or other people that we are approaching would follow in behind. We have the financial resources to do some, a little bit like we did in 2025, some lower cost activity, well test activity, workover activity that could support production levels. And we would look at that as a base case in the first place, so that we can continue the farm out negotiations in the background. So we're the first party to decline. We wouldn't give up on the idea at all, because I think that's going to be key. Next series of questions are on Sunstep. What is the current estimated book value of the SRE portfolio? That's a little bit of a hard one to answer. In this kind of business, we have, created a lot of value, but we haven't crystallized it yet. We need to get things to ready to build status for there to be the chance to actually get some of that value. We've given in the past a little bit of guidance on what commercially attractive ready-to-build projects have got as development premium in Mongolia, and it's of the order of $50,000 to $100,000 per megawatt. So we can see that there are tens of millions of dollars of value tied up in our portfolio of at least three of our projects, a 200 megawatt project, a 24 megawatt project, potentially 100 megawatts of battery storage. So there's tens of millions of dollars in development premium tied up in that. And at the moment, that's probably all I'd like to say about the estimated value. We think we're creating a lot of value, but we have to crystallize that value, and that's what we're focused on. With the ongoing development and scaling of the SRE portfolio, including green hydrogen and battery storage, will it require further capital contributions from Petrometad? I think the green hydrogen project is already fully funded through the development phase. So there the answer would be no, unless in discussion with Oyu Tolgoi that were to be increased. Because the mine might be interested in doing some work, more work on hydrogen-powered transportation, which wasn't in the original plan. That might involve some more capital contribution, but the development costs are relatively modest. And we are at the moment negotiating the extension of our agreement with our partner in the joint venture, where funding point forward is on a 50-50 basis. I think that's a very fair thing to do. At the moment, no additional capital contributions on those two projects, as mentioned. The one we're currently spending money on is the hybrid project. And as you saw, that's the one we think has the best chance of getting to ready-to-build status ASAP. Can you clarify the day-to-day management structure of Sunstep, including the role of the 50% partner? Okay, so basically Zula came into the joint venture with her team, or has with the core of her team, and has added a couple more members. We're very, very happy with this team. They're the most experienced team in Mongolia, entirely Mongolian, and they do a very good job. Petrometad funds the running cost of that six-man woman organization. And then the development costs are handled, the higher development costs are handled on a 50-50 basis. Effectively, that team works exclusively for the joint venture, originating deals, interfacing with all the stakeholders, and have put us in a very, very good position in the time that they've been running. And we now are focused on trying to crystallize the value that I spoke about. Some questions on Mongolia. Can you clarify the commissioning timeline of the Mongol oil refinery? No, I can't. It has always seemed to, every time they issue a new schedule, it's always been a delay. Until recently, they've talked about bringing it a bit forward. I know that the regulator is currently looking for the potential of importation of crude if there isn't enough crude to fill the refinery on day one. That's tricky. They're not going to get that from China. They might be able to get it from Russia, but Russia is using all of its resources at the moment for other purposes. So it's a very, very high profile project, and they have committed to be on stream by 2028. And hopefully the reports of bringing it forward can be relied upon, but we can't really give much in the way of clarity ourselves. Can you confirm the status of Aqua Power as a likely partner in multi-gigawatt export strategy for Sunstep? Yes, Aqua Power is a big player, and you will have seen news reports that they came to Mongolia back in September, I think it was. And Sunstep, through Zula and her team, were very heavily involved with that visit, helped to set it up. We hosted them at various things. They'd be a very, very good partner to have. Obviously, they're Saudi-based, and there are some discussions we know going on between the Saudi government and the Mongolian government about renewable power. Aqua would be a great partner to have. We currently don't have anything signed with them, but we think the team has put us in a very, very good position that should they decide to follow up on their chairman's very, very bullish statements and get involved, then we are in a very, very good position to get involved with them. And finally, on the high-graded questions, we've had some about online abuse on the chat boards and potential share price manipulation. On the share price manipulation, that's been kind of a theme for over a year now. One of the questions here says there's been a concerted effort since September of last year to massively talk down the company and its share price. Why, and hence why investors have been in touch with regard to suspected manipulation, and is asking for the company to report this to the FCA and to try and get the lies and abuse that's being spouted regards Petromitad sorted out and cleared up, looking for us to support long-term investors in this. The other question related to this, there have been ongoing complaints regarding harassment, and we've received some directly from shareholders, and yeah, this is pretty horrible, pretty toxic stuff. We are working right now with our advisors, with FTI, our PR consultants, and with our Nomad and our joint broker to look at what we can do, looking at what other companies can do, because we can't just let this pass. We do want to, we would certainly like to see how this can be cleared up and removed. The conversations we've had with advisors in the past about share price manipulation, the usual answer we get to that is they see no sign of it. But I share the frustration. It seems that, you know, getting on stream didn't do our share price much good, when prior to getting on stream, we had had quite a bit of volatility, but quite a few upward spikes. And obviously, those are the things that we like to see. And once we get an upward spike, we like to maintain it and increase on it. So we're working on that. At the moment, I'm not sure what we can do, but it's not something we're ignoring. So please take that as a positive response from the company, at least. I've got a number of other questions here now that I will I'll go through a few of them. I can see we're already in an hour into the presentation, so I don't want to use up everybody's lives here. But just a few more questions on the farm out. Okay, that one's about timing. I've already answered that one, and that one about the number of interested parties. Likewise, somebody asks here, what ballpark percentage split are we looking at? The proposal we've had made so far is for a non-operated participation, so you can assume that that's less than 50%. How confident are we? And that makes sense, because Petromitad is the obvious operator for this project, unless it was somebody that was already very active in Mongolia. How confident are we of securing a farm out partner? Well, it's nice to have received a proposal, and we're pleased with the positive responses we've seen. From a point of view of confidence, it's always in the eye of the beholder there. So we're pushing hard and doing all we can to land this, because I think this is going to be an important thing if we can get it sorted. Are CINAPEC in the picture as a potential farm in E? No, we have spoken to CINAPEC over the years, but they're not. They're happy with what they've got, seemingly. Have we received any interest in a takeover of Petromitad? No, we haven't. Would we consider such a thing? Well, if the price is right, maybe we would. But at the moment, there haven't been any, so that's not something we've had to address. Let's see. Is the Mongolian government aware of potential farming partner? And would PetroChina still be happy to take the oil if they are not the partner? We have made the government aware of what we're doing. Up to a one-third farm out, we don't actually need a government approval. Above that, in theory, we do. But we don't want to surprise the Mongolian government at all. We take the view that the regulator needs to know what's going on and needs to have news, whether it's good or bad. So we don't like to surprise them either way. So yes, we have made them aware of what we're doing. Petromitad did actually do a farm out of its block 4 and 5 acreage back in 2014 or thereabouts. That was quite a slow process because it was the first time it had been tried. The regulator is now a lot more sophisticated than then, and they recognize that the idea of a farm in E is to accelerate a development that is in the best interests of not just the foreign partners, but also the government. So we think they're well on board. Somebody asking here, are there any intermediaries involved in the conversations we are having with the current the partner that has submitted a proposal? No, there are no intermediaries involved. Would the company consider part of any possible upfront farm out payment be dispersed to shareholders on a time frame eligibility basis? Obviously, it's always something I think about, of returning money to shareholders whenever we can, but we're never cash rich and we do actually want to do work. So we've asked Farminese to focus their efforts on putting money up to do work on the block to allow us to generate news flow, to drill wells, to get oil out of the ground. So that's our focus. But, you know, never say never. How advanced is this process? I think I've covered that one. Can we provide an update on the planned timeline for drilling on Block 7 next year? We don't plan to drill on Block 7 next year. I'd like to get moving quickly. We'd like to do it with a partner, and we're focused on partners from just across the border who seem to have a good appetite for drilling in that geology, and it extends across our borders. So we're looking forward to that. We've had a few more questions on operations. I think most of them we've already answered, but we will deal with the ones that perhaps we have not. As I say, we'll post those online. And just leafing down, I think there were a couple more on overall strategy that I wanted to address. What does management see as the single most important value creation milestone over the next 12 months? I think it would be a successful farm out. If we can bring in a partner that's going to fund a decent sized work program over the next couple of years to move Block 20 forward, that would be a very, very important moment. So we're really focused on that. And in parallel with that, we're developing a work program that we can afford out of existing funds to keep the news flow flowing whilst we land that farm out, if it takes longer than we hope. But I think that's it. What is your strategic profile over the next 3 years? How do you see the balance evolving between exploration, production and renewables? Fair to say that we're really happy with our renewables position, and we want to crystallize some value because that could put quite a lot of money into the overall business. Since we started renewables, the atmosphere has changed a little bit. We were first recommended to keep oil and renewables separate because the investment community liked it that way. Now the idea of oil companies with renewable arms is a lot more acceptable, it seems. So we're kind of glad that we didn't nail our colours to one particular mast, and that we have both options here. And renewable development is an order of magnitude cheaper than oil and gas activity. So that is something that we think we can move forward within the cash constraints of the business. If we get a Farminee, we'll be very, very happy to be doing both. And if it takes a while, well, we'll do some low cost activities on the oil and gas, and we'll move the renewables ahead at speed. Can you comment on whether Petromitad is actively exploring a more strategic partnership role with the Mongolian government and or the Mongol refinery? For example, dedicated long-term supply of Block 20 crude to the refinery. Well, the answer to that one is, under the law, a domestic refinery gets first dibs on any oil produced in Mongolia. So Block 20 oil goes to the Mongol refinery if they want it by law. And that's fair enough for us, because we'd happily put it through that pipeline that runs within 15 kilometers of our current production site. Government or refinery-backed development via low-interest loan or prepayments. Fair to say here that the uncertainty on drilling results generally precludes low-interest loans on early stage of any oil field development, for that matter. The lender wants to know there's sufficient cash from the business that they will get paid back, irrespective of future well results. Prepayments kind of likewise. And fair to say, neither the Mongolian government nor the Mongol refinery are cash rich, nor are they risk tolerant. So I'd like to, but I don't think we can. And finally, from this questioner was something about the fact that Mongolia has recently announced a project to build 6 months worth of strategic storage capacity for petroleum products. You may have read online that Mongolia is suffering from fuel shortages at the moment, and obviously it's shatteringly cold there right now. They're suffering from fuel shortages, and so having a storage of product is kind of a good idea. They have not looked at doing storage for crude, though. They never have. They're actually more worried right now about not having enough crude to fill the refinery. The refinery will have tankage, but it's not for long-term storage. So that hasn't really been looked into. And in short, this question says, is there an active strategy to position Petromitad as a strategic domestic feedstock provider for the refinery? and for Mongolia more broadly. I think we're very well positioned as a company. We have an excellent reputation. Our team is almost entirely Mongolian. We're seen as the best operator in country, and we were welcomed very much as the third producer after PetroChina and Sinopec. We'll need more producing wells and more proven production history to show our ability and reliability to supply, but they're counting on us. So, you know, we're pushing against an open door there. I think I will probably call it a day there, because there's a few more questions related to dividend policy, which at the moment we can't really have because we're not super cash rich. But were we to become so, don't worry, we think about shareholders every day. And then a couple of miscellaneous ones, or one specifically for me here. Mr. Buck, are you sure you're not the late, great Wise Owl who used to post on the LSE chat forums? I'm sure I'm not. I think I would have probably had to declare that if I was. So no, not me. And another one for me, do I spend an appreciable amount of time actually in Mongolia? Yes, I do. I combine the job of CEO, COO and country manager, all for the bargain basement price. No, I do spend a fair amount of time there, and not to my wife's liking, but there we are. So look, I think I'll close it there. And as I said, we will catch up with the questions that we haven't had the time to answer online on the IMC forum on the platform. I'll hand back to Alex now.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mike. And just to wrap up, could I just ask you for some closing comments, Mike?
Yes, we really appreciate all of the input we get. We know that our shareholders have been frustrated by many, many years of lack of movement through, you know, government inactivity, and then to actually get moving and to have the problems we've had with PetroChina. We're fighting these absolutely every day. We're happy to be on stream. We're happy to have revenue that's going to allow us to finance some decent activities designed at improving our production. We're very pleased that we've got involved in the renewables and that is going so well. I think our renewables team is punching well above its weight in terms of everybody approaching us to do projects with them, and through Zula and the team of accessing some of these global players and getting very, very good relations going. We want 2026 to be a transformational year. I'd like to land a farm out on the oil and gas. We'd like to crystallize some value from one of the renewables projects. So please hang in there. Please have faith. And thank you very much for your time.
Fantastic. Thank you all once again for updating investors today. Could I please ask investors not to close this session, as you will now be automatically redirected to provide your feedback in order that the board can better understand your views and expectations. This will only take a few moments to complete and I'm sure will be greatly valued by the company. On behalf of the management team of PetroMetad Limited, we would like to thank you for attending today's presentation and good morning to you all.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Investor Meet Company. Just a reminder that the presentation this podcast was based on is available in full on our website, where you can watch live company presentations and put your questions to management directly. The best part is, it's free. Our mission is to give retail investors like you the same access and information as institutional investors. Visit investormeetcompany.com today to follow the companies you're interested in.